So we want to make sure that that individual who has access to assets does not have access to records, the general ledger, that causes the transaction to be recorded in the general ledger and reconciles that transaction. Because once you get that, once a person is in a position where you can write a check and then somehow intentionally or otherwise allow that check to be somehow vanish into the vapors in the general ledger, that's a condition that as auditors, we hate to see. And so we will bring that to your attention every time. In this case, we notice that the assistant controller is doing a lot of different inconsistent transactions. It's not a reflection of that person. We're not saying she or he is doing a bad job. What we're saying is you've got one person who's writing checks and doing bank reconciliations, posting journal entries, and doing financial activity. That should not be allowed to happen. You do have enough people that you should be able to look at your controls to make sure that whoever's posting the transactions is not making deposits and is not writing checks. And management, the CFO responds that there was no CFO in the office, there was a part-time, there wasn't control. You were short of people to this past year. It has been an issue. Again, this is what I'm bringing out is a control weakness, and it's...
I'm new to the PNB, so I'm learning, and I appreciate all you're telling us. How many signatures does it actually take in this organization to properly sign a check? Is it one or two?
I believe it's two. Isn't it, Don?
Pardon me?
No, two on a check. It's two on a check.
Two, okay. Yes. And that is the standard practice.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah. But actually, and that's actually a very good question, because that actually segues right into the next comment.
Happy to help out.
Thank you. Writing a check is purely if the truth be known, it's a clerical function. There's no authority with it. The authority comes from this organization that says, John Smith, even though you're the receptionist or the clerk, I authorize you to write the check if it's been properly approved along the way. And it's a mechanical function. The real issue is who has the authority to incur liabilities on behalf of this organization? And one of the things we noticed in New York, I'm afraid, was that there were a lot of individuals who were going out and buying things on behalf of the organization. Now, that creates problems because it sometimes not all of those instances were the invoices getting into accounting. And when those invoices don't get in, you rack up late charges. It's an environment that's not conducive. That's the real point of where the authority should lie. It's who's got the authority to incur a liability, and that process should be centralized as much as possible with one or two people. Ideally, it would be one organization who could look, compare it, and say, is this allowed within my budget? And then it should go to somebody else for approval. And when the invoice comes in, or, you know, it's checked against, the invoice is checked against a good, there should be a process. We didn't feel that that was there. And as a result, you ran up some fairly large charges. Again, you have a policy and procedure manual that spells it out, and it should be followed. National office involvement with management reports. This is, I need to sort of go back and reread this one myself. National office ultimately is the organization that's going to pull the business of the Pacifica Foundation is the consolidated organization. The people at National need to have all of the information. It should not be kept. And I recognize it's a problem because you've got purchasing that needs to be done on a local basis. You've got payroll that needs to be met, this and so on. But we're not recreating the wheel here. This is very, very typical for any organization who's got 100 different divisions in different locations. And in those instances, there's a certain level of activity at a local level, but most of it is consolidated. so that you can get information on a timely basis. You can pull together timely information about where cash is, move cash as it's needed. Make sure that monitor whether or not you're in compliance with the budget, you know, local station budgets and so on, and dog and monitor this. We didn't feel that that was occurring. And again, this goes back to, you know what, somebody needs to take ownership of this, of the financial process. Safeguarding of donor credit cards. This is, actually, I would not have thought this was an issue until this. I came across this at another client earlier last fall. A client that was receiving credit card information over the phone. And then all of a sudden, unfortunately, they did catch it internally, but somebody complained. They said, what's this charge on my credit card? And it turns out an organization, somebody within my client's organization, was taking down information over the telephone about credit cards, keeping that information, and then running through some slips of his own. So, you know, obviously it can't be a clean room, but you need to be aware of it and look to see how that can, particularly as you do local station drives and so on. Because there's an issue here. Because you process enough volume on credit cards, you're required by the credit card companies to maintain a certain level of controls. And if you don't, it can be a very, very expensive process, because they will then demand that they come in and monitor at your cost how you're handling this process. It can be a very costly event for you. So what my recommendation is that you take a hard look at that, you know, make sure that individuals, when they're taking down information, they come in with a clean pad of paper and they leave that pad of paper on the desk or whatever forms it is they use. They leave it. They don't walk out with any information. Formal agreements. We had problems. I mean, and this should not have been the case. We had problems getting things like leases. Again, this is stuff that, some of it needs to be kept at local stations, but it has to be at corporate. I'm saying corporate and national office. It has to be there, period.
AC, a question? Okay.
We just talked about consistent enforcement of controls, and this is the dual signing process that we didn't feel was there. And then lastly, on the last page, and we've already sort of gone at this in length, material weakness in internal control. And it could be that it's not just from the local station up, and it could be from national down. But whichever direction, and it may well be in both directions, you're not working in a healthy environment. And my charge to you as the board is say, you're the board and you have responsibility and you need to set up a system and a protocol that allows for strong, timely, accurate information, that it flows both ways. Because it is critical. Obviously, it's critical that the local stations know how they're performing, know who's paying off. I completely agree. Obviously, my view really is from a consolidated basis, but I completely agree. You know, an organization can only be as good as the sum of its parts. And if the parts aren't working, then overall. And so you need that information. But it's got to be both ways.
George?
Well, let's see. AC was first, and then...
And I'm near.
AC here. Are you recommending that? You said this should be control over the money in terms of this foundation, because I think there's a rule, or if not a rule, at least it's been practiced that way, that the CFO or the comptroller does not have the authority to go in and find out what a particular station's budget is. Should they have, in your recommendation, access to the bank accounts of the stations?
Absolutely. I mean, the fact is that It's not a station's money. It's the organization's money. And, you know, if you've got the right, if you've got the right, a person in place, move the money around as it's needed. I mean, it's whether it's a, the same set of pants. The money's in the same set of pants, maybe in a different pocket. But it's, doggone it, it's Pacifica Foundations.
Right, I see. And the other question I was going to ask you about Dr. Leonard, because I'm from the station, that raised that, and we've been, some of us have been considered criminals ever since. You say you have what is the exact amount of funds in that restricted account? Do you have an account in that I overlooked?
Yes, yes. Those funds are kept in a separate restricted account, bank account. I can't tell you off the top of my head. I don't have that information.
But it's over. It was $1 million pledge.
It was $1 million pledge, and he's right. Made two payments, December 200 on December 07, 200 December 08.
You're right. Okay. So we got 400 to 1,000.
Right.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Leslie?
Yes. Give me about 20 seconds to say the cusp of the dilemma, as I understand it here from way back, has to do with local autonomy versus national control. And I think we've probably could go back 10 years with this problem. Back in the day when we had individual stations operating relatively independently, we're beginning to see that we need some centralized system here. But I think this is a longstanding historical problem. My question is, and this is purely speculative on your part, and you don't need to answer it, but can you explain why previous audit reports or even not didn't come up with any of this?
I can't comment. I didn't do that work.
I was afraid of that, but I thought maybe you might. But, okay, got it. Carolyn?
But I will comment. And but it just to, as I said, our firm specializes in audits. We have a long history. I spent 12 years with a large international firm, Don. Likewise, that's how we got our training, doing audits and nothing else.
I in no way intend to suggest that you are wrong in this. In fact, as I say, historically speaking, I can see good historical grounds for why this situation, why we may be in the position we're in. I want to be perfectly clear. This is not impugning your company or your work at all. It's just a concern that it hasn't come up before.
Carolyn?
Yes, you mentioned the MEMSA system under the National Office Involvement with Management Reports. That system controls our membership database, which is the heart of our finances, essentially. There are five separate contracts with five separate stations with that company, including a sixth with the National Office. And I have no idea why. Historically, I've never been able to get an explanation whether it was to the company's advantage or our advantage. For whatever reason, I have no idea whether consolidating it would make it more or less expensive. The system needs patching. Some of the holes you mentioned that end up in a failure to reconcile books comes from the system, which is different in every station. Is it within your purview to recommend that a single system be used, or that system be changed, or, I mean, where does the responsibility lie? Do we have to do a separate investigation, or can you recommend that is a problem?
Well,
and take it from there.
I mean, as far, where does the responsibility lie? I think I've said fairly clearly the buck stops here. By here, I mean the board. It doesn't matter, from my perspective as an auditor, it doesn't matter whether or not the contract is on a Pacifica-wide basis or a station-by-station basis. However, ultimately, you have to have that information somehow concisely summarized and controlled, or at least available to the people at the national office so that they know. I mean, how can the CFO report on the financial well-being of the organization if he doesn't have all the information? So ultimately, it's got to flow up into him. And in reverse, You know, there are times that maybe he needs to disseminate stuff out to, or she needs to disseminate things out to the local stations. I mean, it's got to be a flow of information that travels equally in both directions.
Mm-hmm. Rico.
Yeah, thank you for your frankness. And it's refreshing to hear you come out and say these things about the past, the way things have been done in the past and what you've discovered. I also would like to say that you said in the beginning that you like to set a precedent of a closed session. With respect to what Dan said, as we are biased towards transparency, I would like to know if it's possible to set a precedent towards an open session, unless there is something that is, you know, specifically has to be closed.
That is, that's not within my purview. As I said, I made a recommendation. I said I'm accustomed to that, but it's the board's decision,
right,
as to how you want to handle it.
And I think that may be the board's pleasure. The only question I have is, you stated that the buck stops here, not with the financial committee, the GM, or the CFO. It stops with the PNB?
No. I mean the board. It's the board of directors that's responsible for this organization. You discharge your responsibility by hiring management and then an auditor to evaluate.
The buck stops with these people around this table.
Yes.
I just want to make sure everybody understands that. And I would like to know, you said that it should be done in a timely fashion and accurately. What do you consider to be timely?
I think this is actually actually one of the more timely, because you've got a September 30th year end, and it's now the end of January, so that's 4 months within year end. That is timely. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Was it?
Excuse me. Do you have my name on the chat?
Mr. What's his name? I actually am very, very grateful. I feel blessed to be listening to this report from you. But one of the things I'd like us as a board to do is to get a response from our business managers, because a lot of what I'm reading here does not reflect my experience. And I want to say for the record, we have a business manager at WPFW. I will not exchange him for anything. He watches the money, he counts it, and I've heard people complain they can't even get a pencil from him if he thinks they shouldn't have it. So I do not want anything to cast any doubt about that man's competence. We're short enough with competence, and when we have one, we treasure them. Number one. Number two, talk about CFO can't get information. We as members, whether some of us are directors or LSB members, we cannot get the information either. So where is it? Where is it buried? Who has it and is not giving it up? And we have a responsibility to find out who it is that is the gatekeeper and not sharing this information. The third thing, and I'm glad that my colleague here impress upon us that each and every one of us here has a responsibility as a board member. And that's why I wasn't going to sign anything that threatened me, because I know where my responsibility lies. And for that reason, I also want to impress that we have a responsibility to recruit competent people, not because we like the politics or anything of the kind. We need people who know what they're doing, not only about radio, but about finances. Because you know what? These are desperate times. And until we get these things right, I see no earthly reason, mind you, not heavenly, earthly reason for going for any kind of loan. Because where I come from, this is what the rats we have in the Caribbean, they eat cheese when they get it. And the people who bring us to this stage have a responsibility, and we need to set things right before we put ourselves into any financial commitment that we cannot sustain. I thank you.
Sean and then Nia.
One thing on quick clarification, and then I have a question.
Brian?
Thank you. One thing for clarification on what you said, and then I have a question from the audience. And at the beginning of your presentation, you said this board has a duty. Did I hear you right, to the Attorney General?
Well, actually, you do, because if there are problems with this organization, you would be sanctioned. The potentially, the board could be sanctioned by the Attorney General. Correct.
Okay.
There is a form. There is a when we file the tax return. For an example, there'll be there's a question: were there any illegal acts? And we have to answer yes or no.
Mm-hmm. And that goes to the Attorney General.
The form is called Form RRF-1 and is filed with the AG.
Thank you. Now, some of our listeners wanted to know, and if you can give us the information, how many accounts are greater than $250,000 within Pacifica, which is more than federal insurance, and are these accounts liable to bank failure?
I don't, Don, can you, we've got four accounts, and I don't believe we've got any, do we have any in excess? I don't recall.
Yeah, some in excess of 100,000.
But that's the one at Wells Fargo. There are a couple of accounts, there are some accounts in excess of the threshold limits. However, I don't recall any community banks that have any of the big numbers. The big numbers were at, Wells Fargo. I need to look at that, and maybe the CFO can respond to that. I can get back to you. I said I don't have.
Thank you. And you brought up, what was the CFO's response to all this? Could you give us a?
His responses are included in the management.
Well, I mean, for the audience.
There was consensus. Overall, I'd say, in one case he indicated that it was an anomaly, but if I were to generalize his response, and I really can't, if I generalize it, I would have to say that there was consensus with our findings.
Okay. Thank you.
Let's see. Nia?
Yes. Thanks, Tony, for the report. During the audit committee meeting, you mentioned that on the 990 for this year, the question about the whistleblower policy, I think you forgot to indicate that.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Your year end is September 30th. So even though your fiscal year ends in September 30th of 2008, you will be filing a 2007 tax return because it's for the fiscal year that started in 2007. And your fiscal year for this year started October the 1st, 2007. In 2008, there are a new set of rules that come into play. And the reason I'm going to bring this up is because more and more funders, as you're probably aware, are looking to the financial statements. They want to see your tax returns, and they want to see the management letter. They're not just satisfied with looking at the financial statement. And they analyze, and we've definitely noticed, they sit down and analyze the tax return. They don't just look at it. They look at it in detail, and they ask questions about it. In 2008, finally updating the information with respect to what's happened in the commercial, in the environment, and the desire for transparency, there's a whole new series of questions that are being asked that you will have the opportunity to say yes or no. And it relates to governance and transparency. One of the questions is, do you have a whistleblower policy? And a series of questions along those lines. And we brought that up because that's one of, when we look at the control environment, we want to make sure that there is a policy, that a healthy environment that pervades, that permits this. So, yeah, that's one of the things that we will be answering and answering. Say, and it's not just of accounting personnel. It's throughout the organization. You know, it may be sexual harassment, it may be fraud, it can be anything. What it's really asking is that individual, whichever department they're working in, are they comfortable in complaining to their supervisor, or do they need to go around that person? And that is something that is being asked and will be asked on 2008 tax returns and forward.
Chris. Will you be putting it in? I think you forgot to put it in. Do you have it in there?
It won't be in this. I'm sorry, in the management letter?
Yeah, in your report. Yeah.
No, that's not in the report this year. No, that's that's next year.
Next year.
Grace.
Yes, thank you very much for this severe reality adjustment. We needed it. As you know, that we hopefully all as board members have the interests of the entire foundation at heart. However, we're, most of us are elected as representatives from our local stations. So I'm from KPFK. Our business manager, Efren Uranus, has given us in the last year the most excellent financial accounting we could have dreamt of. Now, he did have major cancer surgery about, I don't know, 6 weeks ago. But I want to know if he is part of the problem, or is that an anomaly?
That seems to me inappropriate for this public meeting.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't mean to. I'm sorry. Scratch the whole thing. You're right. It's totally inappropriate. I apologize.
We're about 20 minutes over the hour that we had allocated for this. Are there any other questions that need to be asked? If not, I want to thank Mr. Paul and his associate for being here. You are the next presenter. Oh, this is Brian.
Yes.
This is Brian Edwards Tiekert. He's going to make a presentation about our financial condition. And Brian, why don't you get to a microphone and ask your question?
I just had two quick questions.
No, please get to a microphone so the audience can hear it through.
I'll see you, Jamie's lab. Just two quick questions. One on pledge receivables. What method are you using for calculating how likely a pledge is to come in?
We have a cumulative history. You know, the one thing, MEMPS is a great system, and it really is, provided the information is clean. You have a great donor database. And so what we do is we look at the pledges that are generated. There are two. In fact, I wrote a revenue recognition policy about this. There are two kinds, just the straight-out pledge. And I forget what it's called. I think we call it the credit cards.
EFT?
No, not EFT. It's the credit card pledges.
Sustaining,
thank you. So the pledges we look at the pledges, and yours have your fund drive in September. So we look at collections from November till December. We look at that, and we've got some history. We were able to get some history from the prior auditors. We look at that sort of pledge collection rate. It seems to be about 78% this year, and that's very pretty consistent.
The subsequent collections held that up.
Yeah, and the subsequent collections held that up. We also look at your sustaining. Now, this year it may fall off a little because, you know, you as an organization, individuals may be in a position they can't afford to pay it. Their economic circumstances change from when they made the pledge. Again, we evaluate that. What we're doing is establishing a historical database, and in the future we'll track and trend that, and maybe even provide that in a consolidated summary to the board. I think it'd be very interesting.
It would be very useful for us in the budgeting process to have as detailed a model as you can provide us, because that's one of our stickiest areas to forecast.
But again, this is information actually that we'd be massaging information that you have in your
But you seem very smart.
It's easy to fool a lot of people for a short period of time.
My second question was functional expense classifications. As you're aware, many charity rating organizations look at how much is classified as programming expense versus management, and we're quite heavy on management. My question is whether it is possible, through creating more detail in our chart of accounts, to allocate more spending to programming or
to the contrary.
The way it is.
I think part of the problem that you've got is there are so many trees you can't see the forest. In fact, one of the problems that we've got, and I don't feel comfortable with the classifications right now, is there is so much detail, you know, that you've broken out. What I'm going to have one of the staff do is sit down with management, with the financial department, and say, okay, and I want to break it down. And I did. I looked at CPB. I looked at NPR. And your level of detail is about threefold. And, again, it's there's too much information. I don't need to know how $1,000 was spent. Tell me about the hundreds. I can make decisions on that. And that's what I want to do is that my focus is, my target is next year, if not this year, is to get it down to where we can make decent, informed decisions on a high level. We'll always have the detail behind it, but if we have too many trees...
And is standardizing and simplifying our chart of accounts something you can advise
yes,
us on?
Yes, please.
Okay. That's it. Thank you for letting me.
Thank you, Tony.
No, listener comments are very important before they leave. It's crucial.
We had scheduled listener comments after the financial report, which is now.
No, it's not now.
When is it?
I'm sorry. The financial report is now, not the listener comments. I'm sorry, but no.
Well, in 2005, I already did.
It's great to have power.
A chart of accounts, a logical chart of accounts. And you're absolutely right. The existing structure is impossible. And it is here. It is logical. And no one has paid any attention to it. I just wanted to make that clear.
Yeah, I get that. We had another request from a former treasurer of the organization to ask a question. So I'm going to allow that as well.
Yvonne?
Please say it here.
I'm sorry. Just wanted to ask quickly, did you find a closed calendar for the organization or a headcount report, and would you comment on that if you did?
I don't know what you mean by a closed calendar.
Well, you were saying in terms of timely reports, in order to have a timely report in a financial organization, what you have is a closed calendar. So, therefore, on a monthly basis, you want to have your books closed by, like, maybe the fifth day. And then the other is... that's debatable. But the other is if you found a headcount reporting so that the organization would know who was actually working within the organization, and in order to eliminate or to any liabilities that might occur if you don't have headcount or know what your headcount is in an organization.
I can't speak to a headcount report. I know you've got a payroll system that should be able to produce for you and tell you how many people you have at any point in time.
Nicole provided the board with that last year.
Okay.
Please, enough.
We're going to move to the report on the financial condition. Mr. Paul, again, I'm sorry I don't know your name, but thank you for being here. Yes, sit up there.
Please sign up for user comments.
Brian, it's a seat of honor.
Hi, everyone. So good to see some of you again and some of you for the first time. My name is Brian Edwards Tiegert. And you're going to spell that wrong, and it's okay. I'm the treasurer at KPFA. I have no professional accounting experience. I've been on the National Finance Committee for 4 years. Because we're in pretty extraordinary circumstances right now in terms of staffing holes at the national office and reports, when it became obvious a day and a half ago that there were going to be no staff-generated reports from the National Office for this meeting, Sherry Gendelman asked me to run over to the National Office because I work next door to it and see what I could dredge up by way of standard financial statements for you so that we could at least get a rough idea of where the foundation is right now. For those of you who are new to the board, 3 months ago I presented the budgets that we approved for this board. And since we approved them 3 months ago, we have not had any income statements that compare the foundation's performance to what we aspired to with those budgets. And that's what I'm going to be presenting to you in just a couple minutes. Yes, they are.
Okay.
And they have my name on them somewhere in really small print.
Okay.
To give you a little background, what we were wrestling with when we drew up these budgets is a long-term trend that has been afflicting Pacifica, which is that we saw a tremendous spike in revenues along with an explosion in listenership around the invasions of Afghanistan and Iraq. And our spending went up almost as fast as that surge of income. We were spending money like this was a permanent increase instead of a spike. And the problem is it's much harder to slake off spending fast, particularly when you've added people to payroll who you start to develop sentimental attachments to. And what you see when you draw out the trends for basically all of our stations is that our fund drive revenues shot up, and we were raising more money than we ever had before in less time than we ever had before. Shortly afterwards, our expenses shot up to hold about level with it. And then, because we've become dependent on spending at that level, we started increasing the number of days we were in fund drive to keep at the same level of fundraising. And 2 to 3 years ago, depending on the station, even running longer and longer fund drives was no longer enough to sustain us where we were. So we've been in a slow slide that accelerated in the current financial crisis quite precipitously. And the problem we were largely confronting in this budgeting cycle was cutting spending down to what we hoped would be a sustainable level at all of the stations. I guess I should start with the qualifications on the data I'm giving you. The budgets you approved in September never got entered into the national accounting package. So it's not capable of spitting out a report that automatically compares actual spending to the budgets. I don't know exactly why this is the case. A contributing factor is that this board made changes to those budgets at a meeting and did not record those changes in minutes that any of us have been able to discover. So note to self for the board, take good minutes. And maybe have, when you're approving budget, one of your finance staff there who can make adjustments on the fly as you're voting on them. So the budget numbers in this represent our best reconstitution of what the board did. I relied on Jamie Ross, who was there and is extremely organized and was there for some parts of the session I was not, and also my own notes and revised budgets that were submitted based on board resolutions by some of the units. I had to enter them in by hand because they've not been incorporated in the accounting package and because we have an inordinately large number of line items. And I got these numbers yesterday afternoon. I was only able to enter summary data. I gave you comparisons on every income line because that's what we're most concerned about, whether we're meeting income forecasts, and then just category comparisons on areas like salaries and related, total administrative, total programming, et cetera. But what this should give us, with all the caveats you just heard about how our internal accounting controls may lead us to produce erroneous reports in the middle of the year without the proper checks and balances, should be some indication of whether we're meeting the goals we set out in those budgets or not. Any questions before I go any further? I'll also say the reports you should be getting, which I had hoped to present to you and cannot, because the one person who's left in the national office who's trained in accounting just can't do three jobs at once, is a balance sheet for December 31st, which would tell you, would be a snapshot of everything you owe, everything that's owed to you,
what you have in the bank and what restrictions are on it, and also a cash flow forecast showing basically how short we expect to be in the following days. Yeah.
Lonnie actually circulated precisely that at the about a month ago with those forecasts. Were you not made privy to that?
I was given a cash flow document by Lonnie in late December and sent him some questions about it, and it subsequently went through about four revisions and turned into something that no longer resembled a cash flow statement, in my opinion.
We're talking about the same thing.
I think so, yeah. Okay. In any case, I was looking for a more current one because we're now almost a month past that.
Yes.
And you've already seen that. The reason this is important is because I know there has been a lot of contention and a lot of urgency around the fact that different parts of Pacific are having problems paying their bills right now. And this obviously fueled a proposal that was incredibly popular down here to take a loan out against KPFK's building. And the concern is that we not become so myopic by focusing on how we're going to pay bills next week that we don't devote some attention to whether on a structural level we're actually living within our means. Because the way we got into this hole was not that we just don't happen to have the money to pay today's bills. It was that for a period of several years, in the case of some financial units, we were spending more than we were taking in and digging ourselves into a hole. We just happened to hit bottom this winter when the money wasn't there to make some payments on time. So what you have is a full quarter's performance here, again with some rough numbers, and I'm going to take you through them. I've given you a narrative. I basically pored over these numbers and had all the budgets and separate documents where there were large discrepancies. I tried to get into the detailed lines that I wasn't able to copy over and explain what I found. I'll just go in the order that the machine spits them out in, which is alphabetical. KPFA on the bottom line of this income statement is showing that it's performing $165,000 better than budget year to date. Some of this is just quirks of accounting. We started our fall fund drive 2 days later than we had budgeted, which pushed about $100,000 worth of revenue that would have occurred in last fiscal year to this fiscal year, right? It doesn't mean KPFA made more money. It just means it's showing up on these books instead of another set of books. Similar kind of accounting quirk with KPFA's crafts fair and what year income for booth fees for that crafts fair fell in. And that's all detailed right here. KPFA did exceed its budgeted fundraising. It exceeded its fall fund drive goal by about $70,000. It did an unbudgeted day of fundraising. You heard Lemlem describe earlier the Bye Bye Bush fundraiser that got $60,000 in pledges. It also did an unbudgeted online year-end pledge campaign above and beyond its normal direct mail year-end campaign, and that resulted in about $35,000 in donations, not pledges, actual donations. So KPFA has been raising more than budget. It's also been spending more than budget, mostly on salaries and related. It is not yet. It has had some staff reductions, but not nearly the full amount that the National Board asked for in this fiscal year. On the whole, even when you factor out those kind of accounting quirks, KPFA is coming out ahead for now. And the for now is, I think, what's confronting every station right now. We are 4 days into our winter fund drive. 4 days is not a lot of days to draw conclusions from, but comparing our day totals to last winter's drive, we're about 30% behind where we would want to be. I called Dwayne Bradley at KPFT on Friday while I was getting these together because KPFT will be wrapping up its winter fund drive on Sunday. He told me that the best they can hope for at this point is to be 30% behind when they finish their drive. I think that we have a little bit of a double whammy. First, the economy has gotten considerably worse even than it was in the fall when we approved these budgets, and pessimism about the economy has increased. Second of all, I haven't seen audience statistics for all your stations, but I know that at our station, our audience went up in the run-up to the fall election, and that when we were asking for money in the fall, we were asking more people for money. And there's been some drop down in that since then. Not just us. And John Stewart saw an instantaneous 17% slide in his ratings. Oberman, yeah. What I am saying is that it would be reasonable or at least prudent to say, if T is 30% off its fundraising goal and A is on track to be 30% off its fundraising goal, what are we going to do if that hits all of our stations? The final notes in all of these summaries on your stations talk a little bit about what their cash positions are and what happens if they fall short. The budget you approved for KPFA had a bottom line surplus of about $120,000. So if KPFA falls short of its goals, in other words, if the fundraising drops off and it doesn't cut all the expenses it had budgeted, the first thing that will happen is it's just going to show less of a surplus. The next thing that will happen is it's going to start spending some of its savings. And the balance sheet, the unaudited balance sheet that we started the fiscal year with, which is the most recent consolidated balance sheet I have, is September 31st, showed us opening the year with about $1 million cash. Unfortunately, of that $1 million, we can't touch $411,000 because it's been frozen as collateral for the national office's line of credit.
Brian, I must be looking at a different spreadsheet. I got one from Lonnie also by the end of the year, and he had $1,291,000 was my figure.
For KPFA?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought this was the total. Sorry.
No.
My apologies.
Good question, though. KPFK, I'm assuming you got a detailed report from KPFK's general manager yesterday. So I'll go through this real fast. The summary information that I got from the national office shows them on track to meet their budget goals. Their year-to-date listener support is better than they budgeted. They've made about $80,000 more. Their spending on salaries and related is $71,000 higher than they budgeted. But you'll recall, those of you who were around for the budgeting, KPFK, like many stations, had not allowed for the costs of severance, even though they had budgeted reductions. So half that $71,000 overage is actually due to severance costs. I don't know what the other half is. I couldn't tell you. Also very interesting is they are spending, even though they're raising more, they're spending less on development than budgeted. And $10,000 of that savings comes from premium costs. So I don't know what you've been doing down here in L.A., but you have been spending less money on thank you gifts and raising more money doing it. So good on you. That doesn't mean KPFK is out of the woods. It means it's on the path. KPFK basically started the year with no money in the bank and with some debts racked up to the national office. So you're going through some cash flow problems right now. January for our stations tends to be the low water mark. It's when you have the longest stretch between fund drives. And right now the staff I spoke to in the national office are concerned KPFK may need assistance making its February 15th payroll. Payroll plus benefits for your station is about $69,000. There's currently $50,000 in your bank account, and of that $50,000, you owe $18,000 to the national office to pay for last month's benefits. Your fund drive starts February 6th, I'm told. So the difference between whether you needed assistance to make payroll or not may be how fast you run those first credit card pledges. In terms of what happens if KPFK's fundraising plummets, KPFK did budget a $250,000 surplus this year. This was a requirement we put on every station that had no appreciable amount of money in the bank, was that it budget a large cushion. So there is some padding for the station to come in a little under budget and still be in the black at the end of the year. It'll continue to have cash flow issues, but it won't actually be bleeding money out of the network under one of those scenarios. Moving on to KPFT. KPFT's had shortfalls both in its fall fund drive, which was shortly after Hurricane Ike slammed the area, and we're anticipating a shortfall in this fund drive. these actuals won't reflect that, but they do show 40,000 in short of the budgeted listener support already through December. The budget for KPFT did not include any surplus because KPFT was carrying a one-month reserve from year to year. But that basically means that any amount you come in short on your fundraising that you don't cut from an equivalent amount of expenses is going to throw you into deficit. It means you're spending down your savings. So in terms of what the board may want to do with this, I'm not sure what the leadership structure is for financial oversight at this exact moment. I do think KPFT has generally, management there has generally managed the station's finances responsibly. I do think in your exercises of due diligence as fiduciaries, you should ask for a contingency plan from that station, what it would do if confronted with shortfalls. Any questions on the case? The next station up is WBAI. Year to date on this income statement, WBAI appears to have underperformed its budget by $230,000 over the past 3 months. It's $42,000 short on listener support. There's a caveat to that. The board had added some revenue back into the WBAI budget that was on lines that have no actual location in our chart of accounts. So when I plugged in your budget numbers, I took something called magazine campaign revenue and added it to listener support because that is the kind of thing we would levy for central services. And there's zero income on that. Rothenberg ticket sales, which is something WBAI had budgeted an increase on, is 22,000 short of budget so far this year. And this may be an accounting fluke, or rather a budgeting mistake. About $100,000 of the shortfall appears to be CPB money. But it looks like WBAI budgeted 6 months of CPB income at a time, but the national office is accruing a month at a time on its books. So your budget is hoping for 6 months worth of money, but your 3 month actuals are showing 3 months worth of money. It doesn't mean there's no money there. It just means there's been an inconsistent accounting practice between your budget and your income statement. I don't know that for sure because I haven't had time to review these numbers with the business office at BAI and the national office to get consensus on what that discrepancy means. So I'm flagging it for you.
Brian, does the CPB give us 6 months at the end of October, at the beginning of October, or do we actually get it monthly? Which is the?
The CPB makes two disbursements per year, but it appears that the national office accounting practice is to accrue the income to the station's books each month. Because the CPB is restricted money. It has to be spent at the station in question. So the way you show restricted money is as you spend it, you offset the expense by showing the income. That may be convoluted. That twisted me up for a couple years. So if you want me to take another stab at that, be brave.
Go ahead. So the national office is then actually holding the money, so it's not available to be spent by the local station?
That is a separate issue. And that is a good question. These statements do not show cash. Our income statements are done on an accrual basis. Does everybody know what accrual accounting is?
Explain.
Be brave. Okay. Accrual accounting says instead of tracking a dollar when it comes into or out of my bank account, I track obligations. So if my rent comes due in November and I don't pay it, I don't have my income statement go, woohoo, I didn't pay rent last month. My income statement says I had an expense of $30,000 last month. The fact that I didn't pay it shows up as a debt on my balance sheet, which is a separate document. Does that make sense? So you would accrue an expense. You show there was an obligation regardless of whether you paid it or not. You do the same thing with donations. You heard reference to this $1 million gift. We don't have all $1 million. We only have $400,000 worth of the payment so far. But because there's a written request, the accounting standards under FASB 116 require us to show on our books in the year that we received that written commitment the full amount of income. What you show it is as restricted income, which means this money isn't yours until you meet some condition. Okay? If it's a grant, the condition could be you use this grant to teach a class. You haven't released that money from restriction until you've taught the class. So it sits on your balance sheet. You teach the class, and then as you're spending the money on school supplies and the salary of the instructor, you show an amount of income from the grant on your income statement equal to the amount of expense you've spent on the grant-related activities. It's restricted assets released from restrictions. Did I get there or did I make it worse? Sean's got it.
Well, as a layman can have it, I've got it.
Okay. So the separate question you asked is the cash from the CPB actually getting to the stations, right? Sort of. Some stations. It has not been getting to KPFK or WPFW. Now, the condition on that the restriction on that portion of the CPB grant is simply that it be spent at the station which it's granted to. So it has to land on their books by the end of the fiscal year, or the CPB can ask for it back. In the past, the National Office has dealt with cash flow problems by holding on to CPB grants, which it gets at the beginning of the year, until the very last minute, and then releasing them to the stations, which has led to some very tense moments when it didn't quite have enough money together at the end of the year to make that disbursement. Right now, the National Office is saying, because WBAI owes them, by their reckoning, about $1 million in back billbacks and central services, they're withholding the CPB disbursements to offset some of their cash shortfall. And WPFW, according to the National Office, is letting them delay disbursement as a favor. The concern you should have here is you're talking so far about $233,000 worth of CPB money that the National Office certainly does not have in its bank account. And they need to find that $233,000 by the end of the year to get it to the stations where it's supposed to be, or the CPB can just pull it back.
FSRN gets paid out of these CPB monies. Presumably that has to come through the stations also. So if
no, that's withheld. That's the NPAG portion of the CPB grant, the National Program Production and Acquisition Grant. It's depending on the station, somewhere between 27% and 29% of their grant. That's actually withheld by the National Office and dispersed to the CPB directly. They later, through an accounting adjustment, show the money on the books of the stations it came into, but it never actually passes through their hands. Yes?
I'm a little perplexed here. If it's restricted, but National goes and uses it for something else, aren't we in danger of just losing it all? Because I thought it was restricted to use for the station it was supposed to go to.
Right. The dollar bills don't, like, have labels on them, right?
No, fungible. I understand that.
Right. So the concern is that the correct amount of money get to the correct station by the end of the applicable period in the case of this restriction. So your challenge now, where the buck stops, is making sure that that $233,000 gets amassed and then dispersed to where it's supposed to be by September 31st, 2009 at the absolute latest.
And did I understand you right? If it doesn't, we may have to give it back, so we may have a $230,000 obligation?
If it doesn't, your auditor is going to balk at showing that money in the correct place in your 2009 audit. And then when you present your 2009 audit along with your application for the next year's CPB grant, they're going to look at the numbers, if they're sharp, and say, it looks like you didn't handle our money properly last year.
Oh.